Hey, you guys fans of Heroes of the Storm? Oh, you are? Well, good, because I got a podcast for you. It's brand new. There's one episode out, another one going up this weekend. So probably two by the time you hear this. It's called Core, and it can be found at frogpants.com/core or wherever you get your podcasts. For free, of course. Absolutely free. Join me, Bo, and John as we talk about, well, Heroes of the Storm. So check us out. Again, that's Heroes of the Storm podcast, The Core, available at frogpants.com/core.
Shall we turn around and go home?
Or we could pull over and just throw them out here.
Okay.
This car smells weird. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. This is episode... Oh, shite. Hold on a second. I thought I had this up. All right. Yeah, I do. I got it. It's fine. Everything's fine. This is episode 262. My name is Scott Johnson, and joining me today, Brian, don't bring Ned Stark. He's just going to turn on you, Dunaway.
Oh, hi. Listen, if Nicolas Cage asked you to get into his smuggler's hole and blow in his national treasure to reveal a secret message, well, the message is you've made some pretty bad life choices, buddy. Also, avoid John Voight's Anaconda. This movie is not for the dirty minded. Don't watch it.
just stop there.
Yeah, his hair, dude, in that first scene. What was going on with that?
I have to look young.
Yeah, I guess so. Also with us, Randy, she falls, the document falls, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. Just give me a minute. Okay, just be quiet. I need to think here.
All right.
Okay, I've got coffee. James Madison was known for loving coffee.
Yeah.
And, okay, well, hold on. Brian Dunaway used to have a sailboat named Mr. Coffee. Mm-hmm. It was on that boat that George Washington famously picked his nose with a boar tusk. You know, the truth tusk. Of course, I'm sorry. You know that. Madison's wife Dolly was really into Twinkies, and in his youth, Brian Ibbett was also called a twink, but we've never known what that meant. Wait. I've got it. Gentlemen, the solution has been right here between us all along. Mm. We're meant to split the check four ways. Waiter.
Wow.
Gosh, I'm smart.
That's pretty good. Finally, Brian, he always uses a water bottle to read the fine print Ibbit.
You ready for something similar?
Yep.
All right. Look, the next clue says the treasure can be found in the inauguration gown located in a white house in the central part of town. All right, give me a minute to think about this and what it might mean. Wait. Okay, I've got it. Gown. G-O-W-N. George Washington's nose. Pack your things. We're going to Mount Rushmore.
It's a damn fine Nick Cage there you got.
I could do this voice for hours. Cage,
so it makes me want to watch Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yeah, I know.
It's got a little twing of that.
A little bit of a Keanu in there, sure.
I like
Whoa.
It. We watched the 2004 mega hit. It did make a lot of money, actually. It did really well when it came out. The National Treasure with Nicolas Cage and bunch of other people, specifically Christopher Plummer, who literally shows up for like 5 minutes but has a huge credit at the beginning of the film. That's what you get when you're Chancellor Gorn from Star Trek.
that's what led us to this moment.
Yeah, yes. He's nothing without his role in The Undiscovered Country. Anyway, it is National Treasure, and let's hear if Scott Fletcher thinks it is a treasure of national importance. Here you go.
National Treasure. Modern treasure hunters, led by archaeologist Ben Gates, search for a chest of riches rumored to have been stashed away by George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Benjamin Franklin during the Revolutionary War.
All right, simple, sweet, to the point. Mm-hmm. National Treasure, straight up. Let's go find the hidden thing.
Here's what
thing.
It is exactly.
Basically, yeah. I mean, this is in the wake. This movie came out right after the first Pirates of the Caribbean business. And it was kind of like Bruckheimer time then. Lots of Disney Bruckheimer business going on. And this was definitely one of those movies.
And it was interesting to watch something that's about exactly 10 years old because it gets you right back before smartphones. And like, what a difference this movie would have had to incorporate to, you know, to deal with how things are now.
Yeah, they had phones, obviously, and they were using, you know, there's some computer stuff happening here or there, but it was, you're absolutely right. It's right on the cusp of that. I'm going to plug this odd looking cable end into my new smartphone and connect it to the bank and rob the whole thing. And the one part I didn't remember is how much of a heist movie it is. And I mean, like, down to the montage heist scene where he goes, all right, what we need to do. And it's like Ocean's 11 from there on.
But again, it precedes Ocean's 11, precedes the remake of The Italian Job, right?
Does it? I don't know. How old are those movies now?
Oh, yeah. When was The Italian Job?
It was right around this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was having a lot of
2003, so right before it, actually.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay. All right. Well, so a year before. So right around, I mean, they're probably being made roughly the same time, but it does definitely feel like an homage to that thing. They do the exact scene, basically, in Ant-Man. Which came out this year.
True, yeah.
Where they have like the quick zoom up to an ancient thing or showing stuff being stored away in the vaults or whatever, and a guy in the background talking about it. And then there's a huge segment of this movie, a big piece of it, where it's no talking, it's just them A-teaming around.
Yep, yep.
Just
all these close-ups of things being shut and opened and zoom, zoom.
Now, I just saw, so last night, no spoilers or anything. But I saw The Martian last night.
Shut up.
No spoilers. That's funny.
It's really, really awesome. And I'll say this about Sean Bean, who's in this. He's our nemesis in this movie, in National Treasure. I expect him, every time I see him, I go, oh, well, he's going to go bad, because that's his role, is to be sort of okay at first, and then he turns into a butthole 10 minutes
and
in.
And then he dies.
And then he usually dies, yeah. Yeah. Although I guess he didn't die in National Treasure. He was put in prison and he'll die there. But but he, you know, that's usually my expectation, is that Sean Bean, that's going to be his deal. Outside of Ned Stark, that's kind of his role in life. Mm-hmm. And he, in The Martian, he plays the most interesting non-Sean Bean role I've ever seen.
Oh,
it's
really
fantastic.
Yeah. Sean Bean. Does he play in The Martian?
He plays this dude, and I forgot the name of the character in the book. Gosh dang it, I've read the book twice. I forget his name, but he's basically in charge of the actual mission, like the astronauts. He's sort of their interface.
Is he Teddy?
No, he's Mitch Henderson.
Mitch Henderson, that's it. Mitch.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And he is delightful in this. Like, nothing like his normal Sean Bean-ness. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. He also is old. I mean, you know, it was really a weird juxtaposition, because I watched the movie during the day yesterday for us here, and then after I finished Film Sack later last night, we went to see that movie, and I went from seeing young 2004 Sean Bean.
Right.
In 10 years, Sean Bean has totally gotten old, and we all are doing it. I know we're all moving at the same clock, folks. I get it, but it was kind of shocking to do that in the same day. So anyway,
so. I haven't seen the movie, but I know the book, The Martian, pretty well.
Yeah.
The book really, it boils down to two people, right? The Whatley on Mars and a guy named Vincent Kapoor back on Earth.
Yeah.
Right. And it was surprising that they cast Chiwetel Ejiofor in the role of a character that was made out to be Indian and Hindu and so forth in the book. And on the other hand, I thought he's kind of what you're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when you think of him, you only really think of him as the bad guy in Serenity.
Yeah. Well, right? He's also, he was a slave for 12 years. Yeah.
Yeah. He was a slave for 12 years.
I've tried to block
alternate
12 years
title.
Slave. I wish I could say the opposite, but that movie just, like, it was so scarring and horrible that I've tried to put it out of my mind.
Yeah. It's a rough piece of business, that. But he's great in this. He's he's not nearly the pivot point, though, that he is in the book. They've made everybody a lot more important. But but I will say this, and I know this isn't about National Treasure or anything, and I didn't mean to make the tangent so vivid, but the Martian it is very, very true to the spirit of that book, and they do not dumb it down. It is sciencey as hell and back. And it does not treat the audience like idiots. It treats us like we are smart.
I'm really confused about that. I have to see the movie to understand, because it's the hardest science fiction book I've read in a long time. It's like reading my chemistry textbooks from college.
Yep, I agree. You know? I agree.
And I come away from that book saying, how could understanding how to turn hydrazine into water make a good movie?
It did. You'd be shocked. And they don't flinch from that exact example of the of the book science to the film. Like, they just, I don't know, somebody in some room went, you know what, guys, we probably should just do this straight up and see how it goes. And they did, and it's great, and it's awesome, and people should go see it. Anyway,
when you read the book, did you was it after they had done the casting? So, like, did you, as you're reading,
it was before,
did you visualize?
All that. It was before all that. So I read it. I read it before I even knew they were making the movie. And so you were probably wondering if the faces match what I saw or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. Cool. Really good casting all around. Matt Damon's great. He'll get nominated for something.
When I'm reading this, it's like I can't help but visualize Matt Damon, and I think I would have visualized a Matt Damon like person had I not known about the casting.
Yeah,
the
it's super awesome casting, and I'll say this too. I think Ridley Scott now has three of the best science fiction films ever made: Blade Runner, Alien, and this.
Wow,
it's that good. It's really good, and it makes Prometheus seem like somebody's cat turd.
And again, haven't seen the film yet, but please, if you have any interest at all in the book, listen to the audiobook version. It's narrated by an actor named R.C. Bray. He nails this thing.
Yeah, he's really good.
It's amazing. The audio, this is like, it won an audio award last year. It deserved it. It's one of the best audiobooks I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's really good. I did that the first through, and then I read it the second time.
Oh, really? Yeah, I only read it. And I started a week ago, actually a week ago, almost right now, at the Mandalay Bay Pool in Las Vegas, and just about finished it this morning. I've got like a little bit more to go.
Yeah, I'm really curious to hear what you guys think about it. It's too bad we didn't see The Martian for today's episode.
My leg hurts.
Oh, good.
I got stung by a bee this morning.
Oh, yeah, don't.
It hurts right there where it stung me.
Don't touch it. Don't poke it.
Okay.
Bee. Wait a minute. Bee. That could stand for brilliance, as in it would be brilliant if we talked about national treasure.
Or Benjamin for Benjamin Franklin. Yeah, that's basically
how this
movie
things
is.
For a foot at Independence Hall.
My favorite thing about the movie is that all the good guys used Google and all the bad guys used Yahoo. Did you notice that?
I noticed that.
Yeah, they would all, I love that weird contrast of his team doing all James Bond smart, computery, get in the sneaky way stuff, and the other guys went all brute force, like busting crap, coming up from underneath. They're all wearing black, looking all tough and whatever,
so
shooting
chains into fans. That's not
right.
Which is a lot of hand waving. There's a lot of hand waving. Like, we're going to give you an explanation of the only way the smartest people can think of to do this thing. And then you're going to have to accept that these other people did it some other way and it worked fine for them.
Sure. I don't know. I just I liked that approach, because what it did is it projected the idea that Sean Bean and his team were going to be reckless and didn't, you know, they were so bloodlust for this money or for this treasure that they couldn't calm down for a minute and think of the best way to do it.
Right.
I guess what I'm trying to say is I like this movie better than I thought I was going to like it.
and you know, that was smart filmmaking, because in a heist movie formula, that is basically the idea that the person trying to steal the item also idolizes the item and puts it up really high and it's important. Whereas the other guys, they just want the money. They're not really after anything except for the money at the end.
Yeah.
It's the Indiana Jones versus Belloc. It's, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Throw me the idol, I throw you the whip. Exactly. Or don't open the door. Close your eyes, Marion. They're opening the deal. Mm-hmm. It's going to melt us.
Right.
It's hard rain, dude. They just want the money.
We just want the money. It's
got 90 seconds.
I guess I liked it. I don't know. I'm kind of confused, guys.
All right. I liked it too, but it's funny because I didn't feel like, I felt like it was frosting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like frosting. I don't like just eat frosting raw, like right out of the Betty Crocker plastic top tub.
Oh, yeah,
but because here's how I know how I felt about this movie is the fact that I had very, very few notes
Mm-hmm. Actually, I had zero notes.
I had more notes than usual.
Really?
Yeah. I just didn't like the movie. I sat there and I had my laptop in my lap and I had OneNote open and I had the title written down, National Treasure, and I had the little cursor going blink, blink, yeah. blink, and looked down at the end and I realized I didn't type a damn thing about this movie the entire time.
I went to this movie with a guy who's a fan of the show, listens to the show. His name is Josh. So hey, Josh. And I made a prediction to him that this is how we would all be, that I would have liked it way more than I expected to. And I've seen it before. I saw it in theaters and I didn't like it then, but for whatever reason, I really enjoyed it this time. I predicted that Ibbitt would be kind of like he is, like, I don't want all frosting and no cake, but for frosting, it was pretty good. And that Randy wouldn't like it. I didn't know where Dunaway would be, but that's what I predicted. I says, I'll bet Randy really didn't like it. And I'll bet Dunaway is probably
a huge list of things I loved about the movie. So,
all right. Well, no, you go ahead. Cause you give us the lowdown. What did you think overall?
So, okay. So heist movies are just easy mode. It's really hard to go wrong with a heist movie, right? Mm-hmm. You have like, it really engages the writers. Apparently writers just like, they love coming up with all sorts of unescapable situations and locks that, you know, no one can pick, and then picking them and so on. And that, like you said, that was the unexpected brilliance of the movie. And it had a number of such things right up and leading up to the crazy pipe becomes the key in the final vault. Like, oh my gosh, that was so like just typical, but entertaining. You know,
right, look right. at this ship-shaped hole.
I loved it.
Yeah. Ship-shaped.
Yeah.
Like, I loved it. Basically, everything except the, I mean, Nick Cage, John Voight, facial reconstruction with their plastic skin. You know what I mean? Like, everything except that nonsense. Like, man, if they had just cast a better cast, you know, like, I don't understand what this German woman is doing in this movie, pretending to have an American accent and failing miserably mm-hmm. all the time. Mm-hmm. How could they not get anyone else to play that part? Like that's my complaint. The film, like the script and the music. Oh, the Trevor Rabin score was really good.
Yeah,
I've never paid any attention to it. And I've been now listening to it the last few days.
It's good, but it's also very much a Bruckheimer sound and soundtrack. Don't you mm-hmm. think? Like,
yeah, there could have been pirates whizzing around to this music.
And I love Bruckheimer movies. Yeah. I can't name one that I don't love. Somehow.
I can, but I like most of them. I'm with you on that. I mean, is he even doing anything now? Like, you never hear about Bruckheimer anymore, do you?
What's the deal?
I just hope he's sleeping on a bed of money.
yeah, I have to look that up. I just feel like I haven't heard.
Yeah,
you know,
he has been
kind of quiet, right? Like,
did he do the Transformers stuff? No, that was Bay.
All Bay. But well, Bruckheimer is always in a production role anyway. It's always exactly. like producer. But it seems like, because back in the day, you had like Con Air and The Rock, and
right.
I can't think of.
So he's currently in the process of producing Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales, Bad Boys 3.
Oh,
Beverly Hills yes. Cop 4.
Okay.
National Treasure 3.
Oh, shit.
Pirates of the Caribbean 6.
Whoa.
Top Gun 2.
Shit.
You got to remember, he is 72 now.
He is, really?
Oh, wow.
Okay. Wow.
That explains some things.
Yeah. Right?
He was changing his name from Bruckheimer's to, never mind, I won't say it.
Holy cow, his big thing now, though, is reality shows and CSI. So he's doing something called CSI Immortality, which is a made-for-TV movie. And then he's all over the place with The Amazing Race and CSI Cyber and CSI Vegas.
CSI Immortality?
CSI Immortality. So that must be like a...
What the frick?
I don't
want to even try to think what that is, because if it's what it sounds like to me, like now they're going to go paranormal with it.
Oh, that would be
no.
Fun.
Actually, would be fun. Here's what it is. It was the 2-hour season finale that just aired last weekend.
Oh, okay. So it was just the name of the final episode. Okay.
Yeah,
except it's listed as a separate thing called CSI Immortality.
It was his idea to have Sam Malone look through the window at his bar.
Right.
Yeah. I know all about that.
Wow. You know, for 72, that can't be right, because I'm looking at him right now and there's a picture of him and he can't be 72.
Well, I don't know. That picture may not be current.
Well, I mean, speaking of plastic surgery.
They said it was 2014, this picture. I'll send you the picture. This is crazy. There's no
good
way this could be.
Good looking man right there.
There's no way he could be.
Put that in Skype
there.
He's
made a deal with the devil.
Well, maybe he's got somebody else's face.
Yeah. But you know what? I spent this whole movie thinking about men getting plastic surgery.
Hold on a second. He made a deal with the hair. He made a deal with the hair devil, dude.
Look at that photo. The one that Dunaway just sent over.
Yes.
He looks like an old Seth Green.
Yes.
We're looking at the Wikipedia picture if you're curious. It's WonderCon 2014.
That's not his
Something's
hair.
Something's wrong because it can't be 70.
That's not his hair. Yeah. And I don't think that's his natural stubble color. Something's going
that's
on.
That's not there. That can't be a 2014 picture of him either.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but anyway, sorry, Randy, I did not mean to interrupt. This photo blew my mind for a minute. Are you there?
I don't even know what I was going to say.
You don't.
Jerry Bruckheimer. Jerry Bruckheimer is the devil. I don't know.
Are you looking at him right now? Is that?
Yeah. The DVD. Interestingly enough, there's a little trivia about the DVD. The director John Turteltaub. Says the initial rough cut of this film before final edit was 4 hours long.
Doesn't surprise me. This movie has way too much story.
Do you think we would have gotten a slightly better film if they pushed it out to 2.5 hours or something?
No, we would have gotten a lot more of Nick Cage and his dad's relationship, and we would have gotten a lot more of the younger guy. I'm forgetting his name.
The guy that they left on top of the hotel in Hangover.
Yeah, that guy.
Yes, he was on the Hangover. Yeah,
exactly. I like that guy. He cracks me up.
Yeah,
I like him too. I feel like we got the right amount in this film. Like we got just the right amount of him, and if you extend it, he gets more screen time and doesn't need it.
Oh, okay. Well, how about this? Maybe they would have put more of this in the water in the reflecting pool in front of the Abraham Lincoln Memorial in the scene where Ben and Riley are talking, and they're sitting there on the steps or standing there, I guess. That water was not real. It was digitally added because the water was drained for maintenance during the time of filming, so they put in some CGI water.
It's like Forrest Gump business.
Yeah. That's pretty good. Wait, are you telling me that feather in Forrest Gump didn't fly around and poke him in the head?
I'm telling you that feather was not flying around.
Damn it.
Nor were there that many people around the reflecting pool in that movie either.
Are you telling me that Lieutenant Dan doesn't have legs or does he have legs?
He does have legs.
Okay.
Wait. In American Beauty, did that plastic bag not fly around?
I do wonder about that scene. Was that CGI?
Oh, that's definitely a real plastic bag floating around in the wind. It does not take much with a fan to make a plastic bag do that business.
But they made it do a cool thing, though, as I recall.
No.
I'm sorry, I brought it up.
But didn't it snag in a creative way? Like something. I'm not saying they faked it. I'm just saying they got lucky, maybe with some footage or something. I don't know. No. I don't remember enough.
This movie's full of lucky footage.
Lucky footage. Sorry. What?
This movie has some of my favorite unnecessary twists ever. So I guess if you had 4 hours long. It could have done more of that.
I could have used better Christopher Plummer description historical scenes of like the Middle Ages and the Crusades and stuff. That stuff looked like LARPing to me. It did not look good.
It was pretty quick and not well fleshed out.
Not well done. Also, I kind of I'd forgotten how this movie worked out. I thought Christopher Plummer is. As soon as I started watching it, I went, "Oh yeah, I remember this." Christopher Plummer's an old version of the Nick Cage character, and he's telling his grandson about all his adventures. And this movie's going to be just a flashback. Him telling this story that happened to him when he was younger. I was completely freaking wrong about that.
Yeah, me too. I had the exact same thing. I kept thinking, oh yeah, Christopher Plummer turns out to be bitter and old. And I'm like, no, there comes John Voight. And I'm like, oh, I totally remembered this wrong.
Yeah. John Voight and his fake hair, dude. Oof.
Right.
Why do you, if you're going to have an expedition, you're going to go find some really important gold or whatever you're going to do. Mm-hmm. Why do you always bring a bunch of dicks with you?
And guns, like it was weird. They all had side pieces, and like, no, they don't need that. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have gone on this.
The Eskimos up here.
You should not have gone on it.
Eskimos.
I don't know, man. They were, and I was, yeah. That whole scene. Luckily, that scene's pretty quick because otherwise, you would get pissed because you're like, really, you're gonna find something. Your metal detector is gonna find something like half an inch down in the snow, and you're gonna dig it out with your little pickaxe. You're gonna dig out the whole freaking boat with your little pickaxe.
Oh, that was tough work. Huh, how about a cup of coffee? Sounds good. All right, let's go climb in there and find some stuff.
What do you reckon's in these gun barrel barrels over here. Oh, they're gunpowder. Yeah. This is going to come into play.
And they're in the old, like the coldest place in the world. And, you know, Nicolas Cage is all, I'm going to freeze my face off.
There were some really cool things. Like they went there in those snow crawlers, which looked amazing. Those really two cool. big machines chewing up the ice.
Really cool.
And in reality, they would have gone in a helicopter. It would not have been that interesting. The film makes all kinds of great visual decisions.
Yeah, and I guess maybe that's what I enjoyed. If you think about them too much, you're like, all right, no way that weird underground void exists where you could drop 9 billion feet to your death, just below the National Museum or wherever the heck it was.
No, our founding fathers created that, Scott.
Exactly, yeah. Like, I'm picturing all these white-wigged dudes in, like, high knee stockings down there building this shitty old rickety thing. It's like, come on.
They had all their sexy slaves doing it.
Yeah, but that's a good point. But you look at all that and you go, if you think about it logically, you're like, this is dumb. But then you look at it, though, visually, it's pretty cool. Like,
it is very cool.
Yeah, very Indiana Jones toward the end. I thought that stuff was great.
And this is the kind of thing that I love about this kind of movie are the codes and the, you know, oh, we've got to figure out what this means. And, you know, all right, this is like, this fits into this hole and you got to turn this and whatever. I mean, that I do like stuff like that. I think the Da Vinci Code did it really well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. At least the book did. Maybe not as much the movie.
I don't remember the movie at all. I saw it.
It was okay.
Liked the books.
It's very easy to blur
Didn't
that.
Didn't
that
have Christopher Plummer too?
No, yeah, it was Gandalf.
It was, yeah.
I just remember Tom Hanks cashing in. I don't remember.
Yeah, that was bad hair.
That was pretty much because it was very. That needs to be on this.
We should totally watch
that. Good, yeah.
I'm of the opinion that that's maybe Ron Howard's least enticing film work. He did.
On the whole, those kind of code movies. I do really enjoy, and I like, you know, the process of figuring it out with the characters, and this
figuring
leads
out
here.
Or this being beaten over the head with it.
Well, this one does it poorly, right? It's like it's so iron pen. A pen was used to write a document. What?
Sean Penn, Madonna.
Yeah, that stuff sucks.
That chain.
And they had more of it that they didn't use. Like, for example, the main character is named Benjamin Franklin Gates.
Yeah.
His dad is Patrick Henry Gates. His grandfather, Christopher Plummer, was John Adams Gates. Like, I spent the whole movie just waiting for that to be a thing. For him to find out, it was my family all along. You know,
what's her name? The girl too had her first and last name were
Abigail. Yeah.
Abigail Chase.
Abigail was after Adams. Abigail Adams, and then Chase was Samuel one of the Chase. Founding. Samuel Chase, is that it? Yeah.
Samuel Chase. Yeah.
Yeah. So I know, dude. It's not. You always see a movie, you're like,
hard to come up with the names for this movie. I don't know what Bruckheimer sounds like, so it's really just going to be Nicolas Cage apologizing.
That's right.
National Treasures 2 is the one I have never seen.
Really?
Is it good? Is it dumb? What's the deal there?
Same movie.
Book of Secrets.
Now that one, supposedly, let's see. Yeah, 2007's National Treasure 2, Book of Secrets. Is the one where they CGI'd a reference to my web comic on a newspaper.
Right.
So I do want to see it just for that reason.
By the way, introduces the character of a great grandfather whose name was Thomas Jefferson Gates. Just want to.
Really?
Great.
And features Bruce Greenwood as the president.
Oh, no way.
Oh, yeah. Forget about that. That's the whole
president
thing. They had to kidnap the president. On paper, this looks more film sacky than the first one by far.
It's got Ed Harris. Ed Harris is the bad guy, right?
Yes.
Do I have that right? Okay.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Gee, I'm trying to think. Let me rub my chin thoughtfully. I'm trying to think of another movie I saw where Ed Harris and Nicolas Cage were having to work against each other to get to a common goal, maybe on a prison island somewhere off the coast of San Francisco.
If it works.
Were there green balls involved?
There might have been, and he may have eaten one. Or no, he fed one to a guy, right? And he'd shove one in one guy's mouth
and then stab himself
in the heart.
In the first one, they have to swipe the actual Declaration of Independence. In the second one, they have to kidnap the president. If there was a third National Treasure movie, what would they have to steal?
The earth.
How would they have to escalate? You're right. Yeah, the earth. Right? I like it.
I'm going to have to steal the earth.
They have to get all of Mount Rushmore and take it with them.
I love it.
So they team up with David Copperfield.
I love it. I love that idea. Is it Nicolas Cage in the new one? He has to be, right?
He has to be. Well, they can't. And what
if
else?
There was a new one. There's not a. You mean the second one?
No, no, no. We're talking. There's a third one being made.
There's a third one that was announced.
Yeah.
All right. So okay. So they're gonna steal the Statue of Liberty.
That's what I figured they would.
I have to kidnap Nicolas Cage.
It says here. Oh, you know what? This has been talked about since 2013, and nothing new except Nicolas Cage would be in it, and it's all rumored. So maybe it didn't.
Was that all?
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage is like always. Yes.
Yeah. He may not. Yeah. I mean, what are they? We're on a quest for better hair because I'm getting to be older now. Like, what's he going to do with his hair? Even in this one, I started thinking, ooh, dude, your hair. What are you doing, Nicolas Cage?
That will never happen. If Pacific Rim 2 can't happen, National Treasure 3 definitely can't happen.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
And this is around the time that Nicolas Cage wanted to do Superman, right? Superman Lives?
Yeah, I think so.
Is a receding hairline?
Oh, my gosh, dude. I still, you know that footage that exists? I really want to get a hold of that.
Yeah.
Because somebody somewhere's got a bunch of Superman footage with him in it. And some people are like, you know, at least it would have been completely different because it also didn't. It wasn't just that he would be Superman. They had this weird, like, Tron looking suit that he wore, and it was all different, like a totally different take on Superman. And I'm not saying that that would have been great or anything, or that he's the right pick. But, you know, once in a while, somebody trying to do something totally different doesn't necessarily kill you. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing it and then watching it with you guys and then ripping it apart here on the show. That'd be fun.
Oh, totally.
Yeah,
Nick Cage has just—he's never had the chops to make the old person transition into roles that aren't leading man stuff.
Yeah,
there was one. What was the movie that he was in recently? He actually played. He had his old man hair and everything.
What was it?
It was about 2 or 3 years ago.
Oh, he was good in Kick-Ass, by the way.
Hold on a second. Mm. Oh, he was amazing in Kick-Ass.
Yeah, I loved him in Kick-Ass.
I didn't.
Oh man, really? I thought that was great in Kick-Ass. To me, that was like, ooh, Nicolas Cage, he's still got the chops. Because once in a while, you'll see something like Lord of War. He's really good in that. Matchstick Men, fantastic. Another Ridley Scott.
Oh, yeah,
Scott
that's
joint.
Really good, yeah.
That's really good.
Raising Arizona,
talking back,
classic.
You're talking back quite a few years, though. Like, Nick Cage in 2015 making a movie next year.
Dying of the Light is what it was called. When a devastating illness threatens to end Evan Lake's career in the CIA. And he's got his gray hair going on and everything.
He's older than or he's younger than Tom Cruise
for sure. Yeah. Oh yeah. Nicolas Cage, because of all of his facelifts, he looks older. He looks fake older than he actually is, which is weird.
It's a little concerning.
Like if he just let it go natural. Like, men, don't get facelifts. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
if you're a man, find out what happens to your face.
Kenny Rogers can't hear you right now because his ear's on the back of his head.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So we briefly considered sacking the new Left Behind movie. And by new, I mean it's been out for like a year and a half. Yeah. But it's streaming on Netflix. And it's not a good idea for FilmSack to get into a whole religious study for an episode. But
no.
I peeked at it. Yeah. Like, we were like, should we FilmSack this? And I loaded it up in Netflix and I looked at it. And Nicolas Cage is 50 years old, and he's playing like a 30-year-old, and it just doesn't. No, it does not work.
Yeah, I can't do those. The movies. This is no offense to anybody who likes these things, but man, the movies that are billed as, oh, this is one of those faith-based movies. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I would ever want that. To me, that would be like saying, hey, DuPont made a movie about DuPont. Like, you can't. I understand it. Look, I'm not. This isn't even about religion to me. It's about.
Yeah.
You're making a movie specifically designed to wrap around your particular worldview, which is fine, but I don't want that. Right. And I'm not going to go pay to see that.
Right. BP made a short documentary about the cleanup of the Gulf spill.
Yeah.
Why in the world would anyone ever watch
there
that?
There you go. That's what a perfect example. I'm not going to watch a BP documentary about the spill they made. That's a terrible idea. Or that's, you know, it'd be like watching, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to. Bill Clinton makes a documentary about how he did not sleep with that woman.
Or whatever. I'd watch it.
Now, I'd watch somebody else's documentary on Bill Clinton, or I'd watch somebody else's documentary on Kirk Cameron. You know?
Oh, God, yeah.
Right.
Something like that would be fine because then I'm getting a more, I don't know,
are
non-biased.
Are you saying that it might be slightly skewed?
I'm saying it's completely, entirely skewed.
And again, like, you make exceptions, right? Like, if it's a real train wreck, like, it's so much that the people who made the film ended up making the opposite point than they intended,
yeah.
Then yeah, I'm there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That'd be fine. But you know, left behind is we're leaving it behind. We're not
going to leave that behind. Hey, I know what we can talk about. We can talk about crap that freaks me out in movies.
Hold on one second. Before we get to that, I just want to say, if Drive Angry is ever streaming, we need to add that to the list.
What is Drive Angry?
That's the one where he escapes from hell to go exact revenge upon the people who...
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, 2011. And this was reportedly one of these, like Season of the Witch and this were both supposed to be his get out of debt movies. Do you remember that whole, he had a period
get out of debt free card? Yeah. Is that what he had?
He had a bunch of back paid taxes or something, or he was like in huge debt and had to sell his comic book collection and all that stuff. And these were supposedly his like pay the bills movies because they were terrible.
Really? My Ghost Rider issue too.
Yeah. Ghost Rider, dude.
Yeah.
We need more. The bottom line is, and I'm going to, I think what you're trying to say to us, Ibbett, is that we don't have enough Nick Cage movies in our history of films.
We don't. Yes.
I completely agree.
We have Season of the Witch. We have Face Off.
Con Air.
That's it. We need more.
Why is he not the number one film sack guy, right?
That's my point.
Because he has huge amounts of movies.
Yeah. A lot of his junky movies never make it onto Netflix.
Yeah, that's true.
We've been looking for years. Like, if you go look right now, there's 4 Nick Cage movies on Netflix. There should be 44, but there's only 4.
Yeah. By the way, well, I won't tell people about that yet. I'll save that for another show.
There's more than four.
Are there more than 4?
Yeah. We got
I just looked yesterday.
Oh, well, then these might have been added. Trespass, Lord of War, Stolen, Next, Outcast, The Weatherman.
Oh, The Weatherman's good.
Yeah, that actually was a pretty good one. Yeah. Leone.
It seems like in the right hands, he can do things, you know?
Rage, never heard of Rage, 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Snake Eyes, way back.
Ooh, Snake Eyes.
Kiss of Death, Seeking Justice. Wow, he's almost moving into Steven Seagal territory.
A little bit. You know what I think is going to happen? This is my prediction. It may not be Tarantino himself, but some future kind of auteur like Tarantino will dig this guy up, and he will then have this revived career.
Second career,
yeah.
Sure.
You watch; it's going to happen. He'll be his Samuel L. Jackson. Just take him everywhere he goes.
We should sack Snake Eyes.
I would watch Snake Eyes. Is that the De Palma one? Or no, I'm thinking of Super 8. Never mind. Eight millimeter.
It is a Brian De Palma film, Snake Eyes.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah. I'm getting the titles confused, but I knew there was a... And it's not good, I hear. It's not a good movie.
Right. You know it's not good when the first thing you ever heard about the film was that Brian De Palma was saying that he'd made a Hitchcock movie. No, you didn't. Mm. No, you didn't.
Yeah.
I promise you didn't.
Did you guys see Joe?
Joe. Tell me what Joe is.
Let's see. It's a movie where he's like in the backwoods somewhere, and he's like... He's deadbeat dad and something. I can't remember. Let's see. Nicolas Cage plays Joe, who just wants to do a hard day's work.
Oh, right.
Pound some whiskey.
That's reviewed well.
Yeah.
So I guess he's an enigma, this guy, I think. I cannot easily just lay at his feet that he sucks, because I don't think he does.
It's just a matter of if you throw enough things at the dartboard, eventually you're going to get a bullseye?
Maybe it's just...
The man loves making movies. The man makes movies.
I guess so. Yeah. I guess he's just not picky about what he takes. And there's probably other examples of people just like him in Hollywood, but I feel like he's just the shining example of it.
He's not. I mean, some actors maybe they have this idea that you have to have it's an art, and it has to be this and it has to be this. Maybe Nicolas Cage just likes freaking doing movies.
Maybe, but maybe his agent just doesn't turn anything down or whatever. But you got to remember, I mean, there was literally a time he was flat broke and he had to get out of debt.
There is, but the enigma, I just want to define it. The enigma is anytime you're looking at a Nicolas Cage performance, you can come up with a better person that could have played that role and done better,
But then it wouldn't have Nicolas Cage in it.
But... Well, yeah, okay, but who would you put in The Rock? Because I love The Rock, partly because I think he's great in it. And it was the right time, right place, perfect year. Was it 94? He was perfect in The Rock. I can't think of anyone else in The Rock Raising Arizona for that matter.
I would say Raising Arizona, yeah. I can't imagine anybody else in the role.
Really?
I can't picture it. Who would you put? Let's do this. Let's have a little game here.
Pick a Quaid.
Yeah.
Quaid. Right, because that role is like angry acting. It's like you don't realize that anyone can do it until they do it. Like I feel like
Valley Girl.
The movie I was the movie I was actually thinking about was Gone in 60 Seconds, where I wonder if that role, if that character would have been like a lot more interesting if it had been played by someone else.
Keanu Reeves.
I'm serious. You just went for a like someone who comes across as even more dumb and, you know, even more like.
Oh, you wanted to be serious.
I don't think he's a very good actor.
I think it just depends on the project. Sometimes, yeah. You know, he's really good in Moonstruck. He's really good in, I already said Lords of War. Matchstick Men. Like, there's a lot of movies he's good in. Like, you walk away going, oh, he's perfectly cast. Maybe that's the problem, is he's been wedged into things he doesn't have any business being in. Like, you know.
Just imagine Lord of War with starring Robert Downey Jr. It just could have been.
No, that's true.
It could have been huge.
Okay, I'll give you that one, because he could have. I mean, he's basically playing that role of this. Well, he's playing Tony Stark is what he's doing. That was Tony Stark.
Anyway, it's just Nick Cage bugs me. He never seems to me like he embodies the role, but rather the role changes to fit his strengths.
Oh, totally. Yeah, and that happens.
But
every
who else do you want?
There's somebody who does that.
Who else do you want to come up to a convenience store and and demand, give me all the money and or give me all your money and then
I'll take the
and I'll be taking these huggies. Oh my gosh!
I get it.
Such a good freaking thing that was. Okay, I have some tech problems with the movie. They lose me with all of that stuff. So the little fishing camera, the flight stick, they had like a computer, like the space sim flight stick he was using to control the cameras. All these shitty HP notebooks that were doing things I would never do in 2004. Right. And then the worst of the offenders here for me was the green lasers. That doesn't heat things up. Green lasers don't heat things up out of a pen. I'm sorry.
Right.
They don't.
Right. No.
Green lasers are cool because they have a distance thing they can do that red and blues can't. Mm-hmm. But they can't reach across the room and make your thermostat go up.
Yeah, I don't understand why they just didn't say, we're going to break the sensor. Like, if they just said, like, the laser just breaks the sensor.
Mm-hmm. But that's not a heist movie. I mean, you got to get into details for a good heist movie.
Yeah, I guess so, right? They have to do all the, like, the fingerprinty stuff he was doing and... You know, he fudged up her coin and gave it back to her, and she touched it, and now she's got fingerprints on everything. And, right. Oh, and by the way, leads me to my least favorite thing in the entire film. Okay, we live in an era where people are getting hacked left and right. We need two-factor authentication. Like, there's just problems galore with passwords and hackers and stuff right now. Valley Forge is your password.
Yeah, that was so much fun. And it was so played to the audience, because I think that they were literally making you feel like you were solving the problem, because they gave you all kinds of tips. It's like, hey, audience,
here's your
turn to participate in this movie.
We're going to slow things down by having Riley seeing what he can come up with. But you've got a couple minutes if you can figure it out.
And Valley then we're going to say Forge. Valley for GJ. And then we're going to read some more, get time to think about it.
One of the tropiest things ever in any heist movie, any action movie, is the younger dude nerd with a laptop. And this particular one couldn't figure out this one thing. He spends the whole movie complaining that he never gets to figure things out.
Yeah.
And then he can't figure out the one thing that everybody else figured out.
It could have actually two of the same letter. Huh.
Weird.
He's this supposed to be hard. This genius hacker guy.
He was.
Try
he was,
password 1234. Just first try that one. See what happens.
I was a little bit annoyed though, because every heist movie has the get out of there moment, and I just knew it was gonna. I had seen it before, but I'd kind of forgotten about it. But it's that whole moment where the person who is controlling the computer sees something that they can't. Change for their hero, and they're like, you gotta get out.
Yep. Every movie they do that. That deserves a trope sound. They even did it again with the little. So this is pretty funny. I gotta tell you guys this. I forgot to tell you this. So I'm watching the scene where he the computer hacker dude is paying the little black kid, the little black student kid, to keep running over to the museum, check stuff out, and come back and give him information. And he came back twice and then went back out or whatever. Mm-hmm. And my daughter just happened to be standing here behind my shoulder watching this while we're watching it. And everything's dead quiet. We're just watching the movie, and he sends the black kid back over there, and he goes over and start reading it. And now what's his name's getting suspicious because he's seen the kid again. And Carter goes, sure, make the black kid do it.
It was really tropey.
It's dangerous.
Like,
yeah.
Not straight up tokenism, but almost like, well, we can't have the whole movie never have a black person.
Yeah.
You know?
This is 2004.
Very 04, yeah. Very 04, where we're all very forward thinking about those sorts of things, but we thought we were being subtle. I don't know. There was something about that. When she said that, I went, all right, you don't even have any. She's not even connected to this at all. She was like 6 years old then. She doesn't care. But she sees this and her first comment is, oh, sure, make the black kid do it. I was dying.
The most dangerous part.
Yeah, I had to fly.
It was like there were a number of those only black person in the universe, only woman in the universe. And I realized there were a couple like, okay, yeah, there was a moment when the woman runs into another woman behind a meat counter or whatever. But like, generally speaking, this film did not want you to believe that women do anything.
Yeah.
No, except just work in gift shops and meat counters and.
Oh, and good. I got a point for that. Here's a new segment of the show.
I don't give a shit.
This is for people who don't give a shit. This has the worst customer service representation of all people I've ever seen in a movie. Everywhere they went where they had to get something, people behind the counters are giant dicks.
But in honesty, I felt the same way. They were very, everybody in retail seemed very pissed, but almost like it was an inside joke, because I'd be pissed too, because we got Nicolas Cage walking in and out with, you know, rolled up, looks like he's stealing something. Yeah. And then another time, Nicolas Cage is like, hey, give me back that $100 I gave you. And I'm like, no. It's not going to happen, Dick. Get out of here.
Did she have to look at him like that? And act like, I would, if I was in retail, I would have said, oh, well, that's a strange request. Did you just need to see it? Or, you know, I would have said some things. She's like, no.
But it's an attempt at comic relief, and it's just all ham-fisted. Like,
ham-fist.
Yeah, they could only come up with one personality for everybody else. They just couldn't imagine that someone else would be strange in a different way.
Yeah, they couldn't do it. And so there's our first
I don't give a shit
moment.
That's good. I like the internal conceit that no one's going to believe us, but we have to go try, and then we try and no one believes us.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I think it's funny.
Yeah.
It has a lot of like meat to chew on, but this film drops the ball. Like instead of being the guy that no one ever believes until he finally is proven right at every turn, Nick Cage, they also want this character to be kind of a badass and kind of, you know, like right all the time.
Right.
And so I came away like, well, what is this movie? Am I supposed to be laughing? It wasn't funny enough, you know?
Yeah. It had moments though. I still say the hacker guy was pretty damn funny. I laughed out loud a couple of times.
This movie very much reminded me of the type of humor, like Armageddon. It was very, you know, it was a fun ride. The humor is, you know, kind of shallow, and I don't know. It just felt like it's, that whole vibe
right,
to me.
It's kind of sprinkled throughout, as opposed to being well thought out and focused and integral to the plot.
Yeah,
it's like, we've got a scene in a convenience store, and they're buying clothes, and
that was a fun scene. I mean, it reminded me of the graham cracker scene, the animal crackers, and Ben Affleck and.
Scott Johnson's favorite scene.
My favorite scene, dude. Oh, it's the best when Arwen gets a graham cracker in the belly button.
Right, that's great. And similar in this one where they're having that discussion, they're changing clothes and you know, on two different stalls, and they're having all these little playful discussions. It felt like that very innocent play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it goes to Ibbot's whole point about lots of frosting, no cake.
Yeah,
because that's what that stuff feels like. Yeah, it's like, there's nothing in this thing. It's just kind of all fun outside stuff.
And I'm no astronomer or anything, but but no, even I called bullshit when the shadow appeared exactly on the right spot. What day it just happens to be.
Yeah,
they do that in Indiana Jones too, though.
Well, the Staff of Ra, but at least they've got like, you know, there's some.
Well, they had to be there a time of day, like.
Time of day.
I agree. I'm going to say that Indiana Jones did it right, though, because
Indiana Jones had so much else going on good that you didn't think about it.
Right. This was an integral link in the chain to find a pair of glasses to look at the back of the Declaration of Independence and see. And these glasses also flip around and do some other things. But I mean, a fifth grade education tells you that
Well, you know why the sun sets at a different time, you know, in the winter than it does in the summer? It's because we're on sloping or on a different axis. We're not just straight up and down. So things are not always going to be the same.
Hey, this movie tried three times.
We didn't know that in 2004.
Yeah, right. It's been so long now, Brian, since 2004. Ought 4. Oh, the heady days.
We didn't know this back then in 2004.
It's so long ago.
Wait, Randy. Sorry about
this
that.
Movie tried three times to convince me in the character played by Harvey Keitel that somebody's got to go to jail.
And yeah.
It never found its footing, that joke, because I kept stopping and going, wait a minute, why does somebody have to go to jail? What am I, you know what I mean? Like the film couldn't tell its own jokes very well.
Yeah. Harvey Keitel, come, what the hell, dude? That's a weird casting. I like him, don't get me wrong, but he looked like he was the cleaner again. He was dressed like a total mobster. Like, that just was weird to me that he was even in that. He had
in my paperwork that somebody has to go to jail.
Now, I know I'm the only agent here that has a black shirt and a bright red tie. Like, yeah, what are you, Vinny? You're going to go knock somebody off? Like, he doesn't look anything like an agent for the FBI.
You didn't notice his mason ring. He's, you know, he's part of the secret society, Scott.
I guess so. Everybody look at the back of your dollars. Got a little freaking eyeball on there.
Right. We got rules, man.
I did go through a bunch of rabbit holes while watching the movie, trying to just track down some of the conspiracy stuff, just like where some of these ideas came from. And there is indeed things written on the back of the...
not the Declaration of Independence, but... But other things.
There, well, no, there is something.
Well, there is,
the end,
but it's just a label that says we signed this on a day.
This side
and
up.
And no map here.
This side up. This is the wrong side. Turn over if you're reading this.
This page intentionally left blank.
But then I was reading there were 9 Masons who signed, including George Washington. And then there were some other stuff, but and then they went crazy with it. It's like,
right.
All right. Well,
and they did. The thing I was curious about was like, well, that's ridiculous. Invisible ink during that time, that makes no sense. But there was. There was communications. There's some foundation for some of these ideas. Mm-hmm. And like invisible ink. However, activating it with lemon juice and then hot breath. I thought about Scott Johnson. Right. I thought about the Scott Johnson a lot when the hot breath in the face came.
That bothered the hell out of me.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that crap. Yeah, I mean, you had to, when you did this as a kid and you had your...
You wrote with lemon juice and then you used a candle.
Mm-hmm. Right, or you put it over the stove.
Yeah. I predict. I think
not trigger with breath.
I think Nicolas Cage has salmon breath. That's what I think.
So? Yep. I wasn't sure what was going to win in that battle of breath.
I like her. She's cool, that German lady. She's nice, but she was in Inglourious Bastards, speaking of Tarantino.
Yeah, she was. She was fantastic in Inglourious Bastards. She was the spy.
Yeah, yeah, really good. But she was underused here and treated like a...
I didn't notice a fake accent situation thing going on, but I did not even realize she was German until
the whole movie. Every time she spoke, I was just like, why didn't they just get an American actress to read these lines?
But she was playing a German, remember? Because he asked her, he says, oh, are you Austria or whatever? She goes, no, actually, Dutch Pennsylvanian. She said, no.
Okay. Then why didn't they let her use her natural English accent?
No, she's German.
I know. That's what I'm saying. And when she was speaking English and trying desperately to sound American, it was jarring. I got the
impression she was just her accent. I didn't ever think she was.
It was so like freaking Mary Poppins.
It would be great if she was going, so listen, the document cannot be taken today.
There you go. Like that, she fit the budget. They couldn't get anybody better to play the role. Just let her speak. Don't have her try to affect this American accent that she doesn't.
But if we did that, I mean, as Americans, we're very wary of the German accent. You would assume the entire time that she's going to be the bad guy, though.
You think that's true? That's an interesting stereotype.
That's good, because it would have taken me off the scent of the trope of he's going to get the girl in the end, and they're going to end up being a couple.
Living in a giant English, whatever the hell that was, mansion thing.
Mansion thing.
So yeah, I don't know. Okay, I guess there's some confusion about that. Did they get a bunch of money?
They got some money.
Why did they, though?
1%.
1%, yeah.
Okay, so which is like $50 million or something.
Right.
Which is, sounds nice and all. But what was the... Why were they entitled to that?
How did they negotiate that deal?
Yeah, because they...
Operating cost, man.
But they did steal a thing.
Shut up, money.
the legal precedence, there's all kinds of weird legal questions I have about the way that movie ended.
Yeah, well, that those get kind of approached, I think, in part
so,
two.
So there's
yeah.
the extra time in the 4 hours. It's them going to U.S. Congress and negotiating for payment yeah. that Scott needs.
Yeah, clearly I need.
Hey, we gotta cut this because it was boring.
All we want is 1%. We're fine with
1%. 1%. National Treasure 2. I got a question about National Treasure 2. Is she there again for that?
Yes.
Okay, so she comes.
Harvey Keitel.
Okay, so the reason I ask that is because what usually happens in these movies is it's like Indiana Jones or any of these others. There's always a new girl every time. And this time, no.
She comes back.
Okay, good.
In part two, yeah. They have to reset the relationship, of course, because you have to have that. You have to have that, of course. And so they have
Mission
trouble.
Impossible.
In the beginning.
He'll do anything to save the woman that he's only going to be with until the rest, until the end of the movie. And then it's move on to the next one.
By the way, Diane Kruger was born in, she was born in Algelmission, Germany. Algelmission. That's a pretty good name. All right. I think we have some clips. You guys want to hear clips?
Yay, let's hear some clips.
Yes. I want to say one more thing about the filming of the movie. It was mostly filmed in California.
Mm-hmm.
That Arctic scene at the beginning was filmed in Utah. Way
right
to go,
on.
Scott.
Great.
And there were some exteriors like New York City for the USS Intrepid and Washington, D.C. for the Lincoln Memorial and so forth. But almost all of the interiors were shot in California.
That was all in California, like the clothes store and all that.
Yeah, and I never once picked up on any of it. I felt like they did a great, great job of integrating you into what felt like a very East Coast setting.
I agree. The Philadelphia stuff seemed like Philadelphia to me, mm-hmm. even when they were in a closed room, like a store getting yelled at by a retailer. All right, here's your clips. Let's start with this one. The whole thing started sounding like a fairy tale at the beginning, so here's a piece of that.
It was 1832 on a night much like this.
Wow.
That's my favorite.
A sound like a garbage truck being dropped off the Empire State Building.
What's this? Oh, he's so... Sorry, here's a... it's about swearing something and not actual swears. Here you go.
Benjamin Franklin Gates. You take upon yourself the duty of the Templars, the Freemasons, and the family Gates. Do you so swear?
I so swear.
I so swear.
I just wish he had then said, I so totally swear, dude.
Totally swear, man. Here's some good acting. Okay, so it's not really good acting. It's terrible acting. Here you go.
I'm just relieved that I'm not as crazy as everyone says, or said my dad was.
Yeah. That's really bad.
Yeah.
All right. Hey,
there's
Nick.
There's just lines that can't be delivered with any sort of realism.
Next time I see Nicolas Cage, I'm going to say, hey, Nicolas Cage, what's a riddle? And he'll tell me this.
The legend writ, the stain affected, the key in silence, undetected, 55... an iron pen, Mr. Matlack can't offend. It's a riddle.
Thanks, dude.
Right? It's a riddle.
Thanks.
It's a riddle.
It's coordinates. No. It's
it has to do with Matlock? Mr. Matlock?
Mr. Matlock.
I saw that show.
Solving Crimes. That's for old people, that show. I can't wait until I'm really old so I can watch it.
Yeah.
I just like how he says this word.
Snorkel.
Snorkel.
Yeah.
I don't remember who said it.
That was Riley.
Was it?
Snorkel. Yeah, they're making up words like, it's a prison. No, it's Albuquerque. It's a snorkel.
And he
snorkel.
Said, yeah, snorkel. I can do this too.
Okay.
Apparently that is, according to the trivia, that's a reference to Weird Al Yankovic's song Albuquerque, which is about a dude who goes to Albuquerque with his magic snorkel.
I've never heard that before. Really?
It's like a 12-minute song.
No, oh, all right.
It's great.
And so that was really, that was a reference to that. That's kind of cool.
Supposedly that's a reference.
Makes sense if they were talking about Albuquerque and then he said
snorkel.
Okay. Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Here's, I don't know what this is.
The Declaration of Independence.
Oh, all right.
You don't know what that is, Scott?
No, I know what that is. I'm familiar with it. With the back. I'm familiar with the back of it. It's got lemon juice on it. It smells weird. All right.
It's been in Nicolas Cage's armpit for about 2 hours.
Here are some great, oh no, we're being buried in the snow noises. Okay. So here's that. Not buying it.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
Yeah. It was really bad. Those things stuck out to me for some reason. Here's some. I think the soundtrack was good, but it's very Call of Duty, and this part reminded me of a Call of Duty game.
We stop them.
Yeah. I do like the soundtrack.
That is right out of Pirates.
Big time. Big time.
Just see a boat going.
I like Nick Cage wisdom as much as the next guy. So here's 8 seconds of it.
We don't need someone crazy, but one step short of crazy, what do you get?
Obsessed.
Passionate.
Passionate.
Gary Busey.
Close, but you're wrong.
Gary Busey.
Why didn't they just answer like that? You're one step short of crazy, what do you get? Gary Busey.
That's a great idea. Bit
beyond crazy.
Dude. One step short of crazy. What do you get? Beyonce.
We're not using enough Busey now in the world. They need. No. Why isn't he in all things?
He
being
was in those commercials for a while.
Yeah, but
wasn't he
after TV commercials?
Didn't he just do like the UK Big Brother or something?
Oh, did he?
Yeah, wasn't he supposed to be like the Big Brother? No, I thought he was going to be.
Oh, Dunaway. The commercials you're thinking of are him. Those
the
are the
Amazon
Fire stuff.
Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, if you got a movie and you need some kind of crackpot evil man, why not? What are you doing?
He was. There we go. He was just in Celebrity Big Brother, which is the UK thing. He's currently on Dancing with the Stars, which all of a sudden makes me want to watch Dancing with the Stars
for the first time ever.
I always feel like he, for some reason, in my mind, this is kind of, I always feel like he's got a poop in his pants. It's like he's walking around with a poop in his pants.
Really?
I don't know why. Like in my head,
draped a loaf down the side of his pant leg,
it's just sitting in there in the pants hanging.
Yeah, it's just a little uncomfortable. You don't want to.
I don't know.
You want to walk too fast.
Kind of want to back away just a little bit. It's like, nah, you can. You're interesting, but let's not get too close.
I love him, but my guess is he's really difficult to work with. That's my thinking. He must not be. If he is what he appears to be, I'll bet giving him a script and saying memorize these lines, I'll bet that is some rough. That is some rough production.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just going to ad lib here.
What is this one? I don't know what this is.
You're treasure hunters, aren't you?
We're more like treasure protectors.
Oh, okay. Treasure protectors.
Treasure protectors, like a jock strap.
Like a jock strap. Here's some history for you.
Do you know what the preservation room is for?
Delicious jams and jellies?
That's exactly what it's for. Pretty good. Here's him again.
Is that that hot girl?
Is that not hot girl?
Joke Spike Gallagher.
How does that math work?
I'm going to turn off the surveillance cameras. Ready? And 5-4-3 now.
5-4-3 now?
Close enough.
Wait. Does he not know how to count?
He never does 2-1.
Right. I didn't even notice that.
I understand not doing the 1 because if it's like a show and you're like, all right, we're on the air in 3-2 and then point. I get right. it. But yeah. That... In 5-4-3, go!
Next time we do a live commentary film sack, that's how I want you to count down to when you unpause the show.
Good.
Oh, my God.
Well, then next week, we got a good thing going.
Oh, yeah,
on.
Right.
This made me laugh.
Gravy flow.
Gravy flow. More gibberish.
Grove fly, R fly gov, air fly gov.
I feel like asking him if he smells toast or something.
Right.
Wrong.
Suddenly he's had a stroke. Very good. I was right there with you.
I smell toast. Let's see. Harvey Keitel walks in the room and says things.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Peter Sadusky. I'm the agent in charge. I want to reassure you, you are not a danger in any way. If we all cooperate, we'll get through this with as little frustration as possible.
I am a very bad lieutenant. You should say.
You just made me realize there's your Gary Busey role in this movie. Mm-hmm. It should have been Gary Busey playing that.
Also, think of this. The original Bad Lieutenant starring Harvey Keitel was a movie. And then later, there was a Bad Lieutenant in New Orleans movie. And that was Nicolas Cage. Think of that. Think of that crossover.
It just blew my mind.
What does your Mason ring tell you now, Harvey Keitel? What does it tell you now?
Let me breathe on it.
Wait, you need lemon juice first. All right, here's not a... What? I don't know.
Is this? This isn't a day for...
Oh, yeah.
You got to keep that one.
That one's pretty good.
Okay, could have also been Jeff Goldblum.
This should be the motto of all podcasters.
This isn't a day for...
Just try not to say your ums. Yes, Brian, you said all right or something. Ibit.
Oh, no, I was agreeing with Randy about Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, I thought you were saying, all right, I found a thing. I thought you were going to, you uprooted some amazing thing.
I just discovered.
Everyone stop. I found a riddle. Let's decode it. All right, now here's the clip of that time Randy told Ibit he could not raid with him. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this, I don't know if anyone remembers this. You two should remember this, but there was this time where Randy just said, Ibit, I'm sorry, you can't raid with us.
Sure.
And here's why.
You need a reagent.
All right, there you go. Mm. I went a long way for that bad joke.
Yeah.
And World of Warcraft fans will get it. You need your reagents, all right?
You do need your reagents.
Worst part of the movie right here.
Your herbs.
There you go. Breathing on the paper. That's what that was.
In slow motion.
Yeah. Old salmon breath Cage over there.
Hey, that's how they solve things in The Fifth Element, by breathing on it.
They didn't.
Oh, it's air. Air triggers it.
Yeah, they didn't do both at the same time, though, in their faces, though, did they?
No. And they didn't lean over just so you could get the perfect cleavage shot of the blonde German lady.
Of Nicolas Cage?
Nicolas Cage's boobs. All right. What? I don't know what this is.
I'd love to go shopping, too, but we have no money.
I actually like that one. Yeah, his sarcasm's pretty good.
Yeah, he's got really good delivery for that stuff.
I agree.
And he's billed as the comedy relief, but with so much comedy relief going on, it's just almost impossible to see it.
Justin Bartha is his name, and he's known for, like you said, those Hangover movies, but he's also in, hold on, Not Enough Things, honestly. Like,
yeah, he's really not.
He's in...
Now, he's a comedian, though, right? Isn't he a stand-up?
Is he a stand-up guy? I don't know.
Oh, really?
I've never seen any evidence of that. I know that there is nothing quite so notorious as being the person in the Hangover movies that wasn't seen and had no lines.
Mm. Yeah, that's
just weird.
It is a little bit weird. Justin Bartha, American actor, known for his role as Riley in the National Treasure films, Doug Billings in The Hangover, and David Sawyer in NBC's comedy series The New Normal.
Just not enough stuff?
Nope.
Hey, you know what? There's a couple of rules actors have. They don't. You never act with animals, pets, or Nicolas Cage.
Right on. Sounds like an idea to me. All right, how about this one? Here's another one of him.
When are we gonna get there?
All right, here's another one.
I'm hungry.
Okay, and then
he's got a million of them.
And they got one more from him.
This car smells weird.
Dude, it does come across like a toddler.
Yeah. This and I don't know which one I like better. This?
This car smells weird.
Or this?
This car smells weird.
Yeah, it's a toss-up for sure.
Toss-up. Scott Fletcher, man.
I'm going with Fletcher because I know him.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And you know he'll take care of you.
Hometown boy.
When they asked what Nicolas Cage's favorite VR brand was, like which model, which brand does he like the most of virtual reality in 2015, this is what he said.
Some kind of ocular device.
ocular device. Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. Endorsing already. It's not even out in the market. He's already putting his weight behind it.
Couldn't have just said glasses, huh? Couldn't have just said glasses.
You are not. What?
If you're not a steak, you don't belong here.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. The lady.
That's true.
Inside.
That's true. Yeah, you got to agree with her.
Yeah.
I can't sell you.
Yeah. She's right. Another.
I don't give a shit.
She's another one of those. She didn't care.
Yeah.
How about this one? Oh, Brian, a lady came by for you, Ibit.
Oh, good.
Yeah, said this.
I'm just trying to hide from my ex-husband.
Who, Baldy?
Yeah, there.
Yeah. How did I not see that one coming? I should have seen that one coming.
Ouch.
I can't help it. I really like finding these ones that relate to our lives in personal ways. Final clip. This is Don't Speak Again. I don't remember this.
Don't Speak Again.
Okay.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was a pretty fun trick where they made him think they were being buried alive down there, and then they just knew that there was a door back there. That was great.
Right.
Oh, you mean which door? The first door? Mm-hmm. The second door?
Look, I'm gonna do to Sean Bean's character what we've been doing to the entire audience for the duration of this film. Yep. I'm going to make him think that I figured out another segment in the riddle.
So I have a question, actually, that relates to... this is totally unrelated to the movie, but it has to do with John Voight. And it hit me while watching that scene, and I don't know why I couldn't get it out of my head. So I'll just present it here. He is Angelina Jolie's father, right?
Right. And Anacondas.
Do you think... Yeah. Well, only when he gets thrown up by them and then winks out. Winks. Do you think that they... Like, I look at a traditional family relationship. Taylor came over last night kind of late. She was on her way home. She thought she'd stop by. So she stopped by the house. We hung out for a while, hugged, talked. You know, we're talking about her photo stuff, blah, blah, blah. And then she went on her way. Do you think they have those kind of deals? Like, do you think that family unit is like... Hey, Dad, come on over. We're having popcorn and
barbecuing.
Brad Pitt's is making steaks or whatever. Like, do you think that ever happens? Or are those people? Is that a very different relationship with like the high and mighty of Hollywood? I wonder.
I think
Maddox has his first recital. Come on over.
I think it's definitely gonna vary. Is it like anybody else? I mean, I think it's gonna vary a lot. But I've never read anywhere. Of course, I'm not like some kind of TMZ guy that hangs out at TMZ all the time and goes, "Hey, well, how's the relationship going?" But I think I've never read anything that points to them being close or anything. But
I wonder about that. Just to me, if not, it makes me sad. And if so, that's awesome. Like, it just seems like it's a hard place to do that. Your daughter's a bigger draw than you are now. Does that matter to you? Do you care? Is it, you have to deal with the same people in Hollywood? She had her boob out in a movie. Does that bug you? Like, just all those, all the common stuff that you would want to have answered as a father or as a parent with a daughter. I just wonder what that's like. I don't know. I always think about that.
Well, and money, like the money is what always gets me. Like, if I had a lot of money, I'm pretty sure I would live closer to my family. Mm-hmm. Like, and I mean like down to in the same house compound. Mm-hmm. Maybe,
you got money, get out.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, I know what you mean.
I don't understand that aspect of it. That you own a home that has 22 bedrooms aspect of it makes me always wonder.
Yeah. It's always weird.
I don't even know. This sounds like the lottery discussion that I have with a lot of people. And to me, I think if you want to ruin every relationship you have, win the lottery.
There's a statistical likelihood that your life is a butthole if that happens to you. But also, so Kim and I, we made a pact the first year we were married. And I've never told this on the air anywhere before, but we made a pact.
How did you make this pact?
Well, we did it under the George Washington Memorial.
They pricked their fingers and joined them. And
then I sliced my thumb.
Yeah. I wrote it in invisible ink on the back of the Bill of Rights.
Yeah. I needed blood to use as ink. So instead of slicing any other part of my skin.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it. It just wouldn't happen.
I lifted up John Adams's.
My scrot.
His scrot. And then I wrote it there. So anyway, she and I made this deal that if we ever came into a ton of money, whatever the cause, that we would remain quiet. What she referred to as she coined the phrase quiet millionaires is what she called it. Yeah. And the idea would be that you would just keep it all hush hush. You'd pay off a modest home and you'd improve it however you wanted to, but you wouldn't go too nuts. The point of it was,
so you're saying that you won $1 million like 10 years ago.
I'm saying you wouldn't know. See, that's the whole fun of it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. For all you guys know, I'm the richest guy in all of Utah, and no one knows.
And you very well could be.
Let me just tell you something, because you're my friends. We're not the richest people in Utah.
Oh.
But if it ever happens, we want to be quiet millionaires. And you always hear about those guys, like CEO of GE lives in the same house he's had his 2-bedroom bungalow forever, and you know drives a Honda and like that. Mm-hmm. What I fear more than not having money is having a ton of it and having
all the problems
feeling like shit the rest of your life
That's the thing. You all of a sudden, if you have tons of money, suddenly you have to make decisions for every single person.
Yeah,
because that's what they want. Everybody's going to come to you for money. Mm-hmm. And you've got to guide everybody's life. Now it sounds like fun for some people. Not me.
I don't know anyone. If you really got to the honest truth, I don't think it's fun for anyone. I think they're lying if they tell you that. Because it's not to say you can't have money and have a good life and all that. Absolutely you can. But the people who do, you don't hear about a lot. The ones that are always in the limelight, the ones that are, you know, let me tell you this. The 50 guys entouraging around with Justin Bieber, they're not his friends.
No.
What?
They're not his
really
friends.
Your friends, Justin.
Yeah, if that money all went away, you know what? There's a great interview I read sometime with MC Hammer. Oh. And he was just surrounded by people who adored him constantly until all his money got spent and they all disappeared. All of them left. Of course they freaking did.
See ya.
Yes, it was fun while it lasted. Thanks for the parachute pants.
Did you guys follow the whole Notch thing a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, he got
on Twitter and just lost it.
Yeah, that was really interesting. He's just like, I'm in Ibiza. I'm surrounded by famous people. There are people flanking me left and right, and I've never felt more isolated in my life. Like that's, you know, that says something for a guy who went from, you know, basement dwelling video game programmer to billionaire.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated that honesty. I thought that was something. So this isn't me going, rich people suck. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying the rare thing is for somebody to get their head around that and not turn into a monster. That's all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
So there's a reason we call it FU money.
Yeah, it is FU money.
I call it shut up money because that's what I always do to my kids. They're like, blah, 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 blah. Here, shut up.
I just want
some money and go away.
I just don't want to be in debt. I just want to have enough to help my kids do college. I just want to have enough to, you know, I don't need to be rich. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
But what I am, what I'm really saying is,
I'm hungry.
All right. Anyway,
this episode smells funny.
That brings us to this. Film Sack checklist, a fabled checklist that we do every week. Father son sub story that needs resolution. Check. Got it. Best place to hide your German lady is behind the meat counter. Check. And one does not simply walk into the National Museum. Check. Get it? Boromir.
Yeah.
Get it?
Yeah.
Well, point out, Sean Bean survived the movie.
Oh, yeah. He lived. Oh, my gosh.
He would have been on the checklist.
Yeah. Can you believe that?
Crazy.
I remember in GoldenEye when the entire satellite fell on him. Remember that? Yeah. That was great.
Mm-hmm. That took him out for several movies, really.
It really did.
We can count that for this one.
I really think that he's in my top 10 favorite, like, not B actors, but guys that don't ever get main roles. I just love Sean Bean. I can't wait for you guys to see The Martian because his role is so subtle and interesting. Freaking loved it.
Why isn't he a lead ever?
I don't know. It's weird, isn't it? He has the chops for it. He could do it.
He's got the talent.
Have you seen what's the deal? Have you seen Black Plague or whatever it's called, or Black Death? He's kind of a lead in that, although he gets pulled apart in four ways. It's kind of gross. He does die in that. But you know, and then you'd argue that in Game of Thrones season one, he was kind of a lead.
And you get your taste buds all set for him to be a lead and to have 100 episodes of him as a lead. Damn you, George R. R. Martin.
I know. I really like him. Maybe what he'll get. I got a perfect idea. And once you see him in The Martian, you'll agree with me because you kind of need to see that to see what I'm seeing here. But make him a regular, well-made BBC America TV show where he is a quiet, aging, can't quite retire detective. And make it a procedural. I don't care. Set it in London. Give him his normal accent. Let him just do his thing. I would watch that. I'd watch the hell out of that.
Mm-hmm.
He's really, really fun to watch.
Let Sean Bean be the next Doctor Who.
Oh!
Oh, wow.
Oh! Okay, you finally gave me a window to watch Doctor Who. That would, now I'm interested. let's see here. What else? Oh, we got some Star Trek stuff. Yoshi Jenkins was the little weird dinosaur that Mario wrote on. No. It's the FBI agent. He played a Vizian crew member in the Star Trek Enterprise episode Congenitor. Now, that's not the same... Yeah, that's not the same. So the black guy that's a surprise mother effer, that guy from what's the show? Dexter.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
he's in this, but he doesn't say anything. He's just there hanging out. But he's there. He's an agent. I don't think that's Yoshi. Mm. Anyway, you guys know the scene I'm talking about in Dexter, right? Surprise mother effer. No. You've not heard that?
Never seen Dexter.
The dude that figures out who he is, right?
You know what? I'm gonna find it.
So Brian Dunaway just said never seen Dexter. I just want to guess it's because you generally have kids around, right?
No, I don't watch movies that TV shows, excuse me. I don't watch TV shows that deal with
serial killers,
death constantly. I watched a few episodes of House and it's just too upsetting to watch people like almost dead every episode. I'm just not big.
I'm with you on House because House was always like, this week someone's got a worm in their brain and we don't know why or how. Like, I hate that. But this thing was different. It was like Batman, except his powers were to kill
murder people.
But it was bad people though.
Yeah, he'd only kill the bad people, Brian.
Yeah, and the guy from Warriors was his dad, so that was kind of cool. So here's that clip. I got to remember to bleep this in the final thing, but this is what he's famous for right here. Oh, it's not playing.
Oh,
hold on. Let me
mighty get easy to bleep.
Here we go. I'll replay it.
Surprise, mother.
Oh.
What's going to happen?
Piece of crap out of that.
Is that from Dexter or Max Headroom?
That's from Dexter. I've got to find a better one. Okay, here we go. Here's another one.
Surprise, mother.
There you go. That's the line.
I am confused right now.
He's great in that show. He died in the second season. Spoilers. Anyway, it's been 2 weeks.
He was the other detective who figured things out.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Ron Canada, that's a great name. I'm Ron Canada. He played Guard Woodruff. In TNG, he played a dude. In DS9, he played a dude. And in Voyager, he played a dude. Christopher Plummer, the biggest of them all. He was John Adams Gates. He, although not in this film very long, he played General Chang in Star Trek 6, The Undiscovered Country. So there's that. He had the
there's
eye
a Lost connection to the dude who's like second in command to Harvey Keitel was Jacob on Lost.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's why I know that face.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Wait, Jacob.
Mark Pellegrino. Jacob, the guy who lived on the island, the ghost.
The white one.
Right. Not the man in black.
Not the man in black.
The
one in white.
But the other one.
Right. Okay. Damn it. You're making me want to watch Lost again. Don't do
that. Yeah, well, nothing wrong with that.
Twitter post. This is where we... Oh, no. Did I give a soundtrack grade? I give it a B for Bruckheimer.
Bruckheimer-y.
Appropriate rating and letter.
140 characters or less. That's how this works. Let's start with Randy.
National Treasure. The perfect Halloween movie, including a terrifying look at what Nick Cage and John Boyd look like mere minutes after getting bad facelifts.
John Boyd had work done, probably.
God, did you look at him in this movie?
Yeah, I guess so. I did look at him.
He needed hair work is what he needed.
Yeah. He just needed one trip through a snake's belly. Everything would have been fine.
Slick it back.
Slick it back, baby. Next up, we have Brian Dunaway.
A National Treasure. Like sitting through the entire movie credit roll, just in case there's a Sean Bean death scene.
Oh.
No? How about like 2 hours of Adam West Batman trying to help Batman get Batman? Hold on a second. Like 2 hours of Adam West trying to get Robin, help him get there.
Oh, I liked helping Batman get Batman.
Damn it.
No, you're absolutely right. This movie is like some sort of upside down Inception.
Hold on. We need to repeat this real quick. Batman.
Like
helping
2 hours.
Batman. Hold on.
Batman.
Helping Batman get Batman.
That's
and
brilliant.
Then I'm going to quote that, and then I'm going to credit the Brian Dunaway.
Thank you.
And then I'm going to put that on Twitter. All right. Enjoy.
Adam West.
let's end this with Brian Ibbett.
National Treasure. If you play this movie backwards and write down the second letters of each character's first words of dialogue, you'll be able to rearrange letters to help you find Nicolas Cage's missing career.
Oh, zing. Boom, slap, wappo. That was pretty good.
There it is.
All right, it's this now. All right, I have this little piece of paper. Holy. Definitely not my Martian
that
ticket stub.
That was the worst piece of paper rolling.
Yeah, that's
ever,
a tiny
I've
piece of
heard.
Cardboard.
It is. It's my Martian
it
ticket stub.
It sounded like your hands rubbing together.
This just in.
You need lotion.
This is the alternate title for the film. First that was proposed was Can't Believe They Used That Fake Tube Trick Twice, or... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Harvey Keitel, agent of or cleaner, the clothes are the same. emails, we got calls, actually. We're going to play some calls. And this first call, we're doing two today. The first call is about movies we need to compare.
Film set guys, this is Kelly from formerly Aurora, Illinois, but I just moved to California. And I just wanted to let you know that at Nerdtacular, the idea came up of watching The Magnificent Seven and then comparing that to The Seven Samurai. And that's a great idea. My husband and I did it over the summer, and it's really very, very interesting. But there's another one you could also do as a pairing like that. Another film, Rashomon, another Japanese film by the same director, is really interesting too. And then they did another Western remake starring, guess who, William Shatner, and it called The Outrage. And we actually found the comparison of those two to be really interesting too. So I suppose those might be some neat things to add to the film stack list. Thanks so much for all you do. Love the show.
All right. I love this idea. Like, we talked about it in Nerdtacular, but comparing the, you know.
Comparing Kurosawa movies.
Yeah, I like that. There's probably other examples of that that aren't even like, well, here's a foreign one and here's the one that was inspired by it. You could do like, I don't know what it would be like. It'd be like watching Friends
Infernal Affairs and... What's the American version?
Dude, Where's My Car?
Dude, Where's My Car? You know who's in that?
Hard Boiled and...
Sydney Bristow's in Dude, Where's My Car? Do you know that? What's her name?
Yeah.
Can't think of her name.
Well, you know.
She was really, really attractive.
She was.
Is still.
Is.
She's a lovely woman.
Exactly.
Now.
But yeah. I have a feeling that she's almost exactly like the characters she plays.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Let's watch The Grudge and... The Grudge.
Ooh, The Ring? Yeah.
Ooh, like a foreign...
Ringu.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to see that. Yeah.
Did you call it The Ringu?
No, that's the
Japanese
version. Ringu.
It's called The Ringu?
The Ring.
Ringu. The Great Ringu.
The Ringu. Like that?
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
I don't think there's a that. It's just Ringu.
The potato is the secret ingredient. Right? All right. Anyway, we'll write those down. Here's another call about nail drivers.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding. One more. He says this is the final one. This guy says this. I doubt this is truly the final of anything. But one thing that makes today's calls unique, though, they are both exactly the exact same length. They're both 45 seconds to the millisecond long, which is really
something.
Weird.
What? Yeah, George Washington.
All right, here it is.
I'd like to put this to rest for once and all. The nail driver, Scott, oh God, Brian, no. Randy, Brian. Rebuttal to Sean. C-I-A-N. I don't know who spells Sean. Sean. Anyway, Sean is S-E-A-N. Anyways, nail driver for a gun is real simple. It's from the old Western, you know? Nail driver, because you're driving nails into the coffin. You're killing guys. Guns, bullets equals death. Coffins in the ground. End of statement. And in the words of Fred Thompson, I don't give a shit. Have a good day, Scott. Love all your stuff. Patreon, the whole nine yards. I'm deeply involved in Frog Pants. Thanks so much. Enjoy it. Ciao.
I like him calling out Sean in the early part of his call. Real smack talker, this
and
guy.
And not just calling him out, but like making fun of the way he spells his name. Real nice. Yeah, real grown up.
Real classy there, buddy.
Mr. 45 seconds of whatever your name was.
Yeah.
So the film Infernal Affairs was remade, and it was called The Departed.
Oh. I didn't know.
Right.
It's got your Marky Mark and your Leo DiCaprio there, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I sent a link in Skype as well. There's a whole list of foreign movies that were this before they came to American movies, and there's a lot.
Oh, yeah, look at that. Definitive Netflix Guide to Modern Nicolas Cage Movies is the link you just sent me.
Oh, is it? No, there's another one
after that. One after that.
The one after that.
Oh.
Well, let me scroll
down. You need to look at that one, too, though.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds great. What's the one? Is it Wicker Man that we've never seen where he has a bunch of bees in his face? That we got to see that. Nice. He puts a bucket on his face and goes,
Yes, that is what
Yes, that is. Hey, there was an Italian language film in 1963 called 8 1/2 that we remade into 9.
Oh, my. Really? Weird.
Yeah, we rounded up.
So the predominant number, this is crazy. The big winner I thought would have been, I don't know what I thought it would have been, but it's French.
Oh yeah.
Well, the French have a huge film.
Jeez, look at
history.
That.
So, mm-hmm.
So The Departed was a Chinese movie, probably Hong Kong, right?
Right. It's called Infernal Affairs.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Meaning not mainland, I'm guessing, because you know they don't do a lot of movies there.
Right.
Yojimbo was the Japanese inspiration for A Fistful of Dollars.
Doll hairs.
Doll hairs.
Doll hairs.
Hey, let's turn that off.
Yeah, I got a little phone call going there. That's what you got there.
Call me now.
Jungle to Jungle was a remake?
Whatever. Jungle to Jungle was Un Indian Dans la Ville.
Vanilla Sky was Abre los Ojos.
The LOL in 2012 was a remake of LOL Laughing Out Loud in 2008.
And there was really a stretch where every horror movie you would go see every year was a remake of some Japanese thing.
Yeah, right.
It kind of got to be to where you were just like, I'm not going to go see an American horror movie because the original's better.
I thought Let the Right One In was one of those, but it's not listed here.
It was, though. It was Sweden,
Sweden. Oh, that's why. Okay. Yeah.
Sweden.
Oh, there it is right there. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's one for you. Three Men and a Baby, 1987, was a remake of Tre Homes et un Coffin in 1985. I can do the really badass French accent, as you can tell.
No, but it's like that you do it in your German.
Yeah.
Tres Homes.
I'm sure the French also appreciate that.
We'll ask Patrick. He'll be fine.
Oh, quick change. Bill Murray thing was based on something French, too.
Yeah, lots of French.
Hold up.
Wow. French as hell, this list. I would have expected more Italian for some reason.
Yeah, me too. And there might be.
Netflix executives who listen to the show.
Naked women drinking cappuccinos.
Right.
Please stream Quick Change so we can watch it for film sack.
Oh, yeah. I love that movie. I don't want to say anything bad about that movie.
That's okay. We need a good.
Randy Quaid in it, Brian Ebbett.
That's a great thing about that movie.
I'll watch it. I'll watch it. You got me on that one. All right, next week, here's what we're doing. Oh, by the way, if you want to send your own emails in, please do. filmsack@gmail.com or 801-471-0462 is our phone number. Leave voicemails just like the ones you heard. Our next thing to do is Quantum Leap. One of us is taking some time away. Therefore, we are sticking in another one of these because we don't like to leave you guys hanging every week. And it's a Quantum Leap episode. Do we know which one?
Yes. Boogeyman.
The Boogeyman.
It's season 3, episode 5, I believe.
3-5.
Episode 5.
We'll make sure. But next week, we'll tell you before we start. Before we hit play, we'll make sure you know so you can pause it and get the right one queued up. But it's all on Netflix. Also, I think it's streaming elsewhere, too. I don't think it's exclusive there. But anyway.
And then after that, we're going to watch Cujo.
What?
I am so Stephen King these days that I'm ready for some ancient Stephen King. That'll be
season
great.
3, episode 3. So just remember the number 3.
It's some kind of
only number you need to know.
It's a riddle.
There was and only 4 seasons of Quantum Leap, or is that all they have?
I think there was a 5th season, wasn't there?
Oh, there was 5 seasons, you're right.
Yeah, I have 5 boxes.
Yeah.
There's 5 boxes, Brian.
5 boxes.
That's next week. That's Quantum Leap, season 3, episode 3, The Boogeyman. Is that the name?
Boogeyman.
Yes. All right. Boogeyman.
So be here for that. That's going to do it for today's show. Thank you all for being here. Filmsack.com is the website. Please go there. Communicate with us in the posts. We always enjoy those comments. Always fun to go back and forth. Very, very active group there. So please join us there. You can also check out our subreddit, which also talks a lot about Filmsack stuff when they come up. That's at frogpants.reddit.com. Again, voicemails 801-471-0462 or email us filmsack@gmail.com. We are on Twitter @filmsack. Leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts are distributed. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time.
This means something.
All that quiet meant something. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
I don't give a shit.